It's All Things Considered from North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. As we do each Friday at this time, a discussion about state politics. Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch is here, along with Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation. Happy Friday.
Same to you.
Back at
you.
Let's start with an interesting report from WRAL, which came out yesterday. This relates to tech giant Apple and its decision not to bring a second headquarters to North Carolina. Journalists have repeatedly asked for documents detailing what it was that state and local officials offered to Apple, trying to entice them. We've talked about incentives here before, but so far, journalists are getting stonewalled. Is there some good proprietary, perhaps, reason to keep this bid mostly secret, or do they need to reveal more of what this recruitment effort was all about?
Well, they should be revealing it. I mean, it's public information. It's our public money that's being offered, by and large, to go to these developers. It is the nature of this very pernicious game that we are trapped in of incentives that, you know, you don't want to tell. It's a secret behind the closed doors kind of negotiations that go on. Nobody wants to tip their hand as to how much they're offering. You don't want to offer too much because then maybe you'll overbid. I mean, it is. I think Becky and I have often agreed on this, that it's a pernicious process. The problem, the only thing I'll say about that is that the public, I don't think, agrees. I think the public generally thinks they love these headlines, and the politicians find it irresistible to have a headline where they announce 1,000 jobs. It's a very difficult situation.
Well, I absolutely agree with Robin. This is something that we've agreed on consistently over the years. You know, government ought not be in the business of picking winners and losers and using taxpayer money to bribe or, you know, entice people to come to our state. Rob mentioned, you know, he doesn't think the public cares about it. And I think you're right. And I think part of the reason is, you know, they just see the big headlights and the big shiny apples, if you will. You know, if they understood that it's their money that's being used for this, and that's something that, you know, thank you for bringing this up. And Rob and I within our organizations have tried to shine some light on this. But this is the problem. You know, when it is government money, there is a disclosure and a transparency that is required. You know, we ought to know how our money is being spent. That is not the case in this. Now, what I've seen through the news reports is that what the powers that be are saying is, well, there's still negotiations out there with Apple, and so we don't want to give away anything. We don't want to, you know, show our cards. If that's part of the game, then maybe government ought not be in it. Now, there's a real difference when it's private individuals competing or negotiating different contracts. That's something entirely different. But when it's our money, we ought to have exposure to it, and we ought to know what that money's being spent for.
All that said, there are some fuzzy areas. I mean, the truth of the matter is that, you know, when you're building, if you build a road, you can see how that's a slippery slope. You build a road, you put something off of an interstate so you can get to a new factory. Is that an incentive? I mean, where do you draw the line? If it's being done in Robeson County or Halifax County, you can make an argument that, my gosh, you know, there's nothing there right now. That, you know, there's at least a stronger argument to be made that maybe we can do some good with these things than we can in, say, a booming area like the Triangle. But in general, I agree that it's a vexing and difficult area.
A new version of legislation aimed at forcing the hand of sheriffs to help federal immigration officials dropped this week. Basics here are that sheriffs would be required to help ICE officials in detainments or face some significant fines. A few sheriffs, some who campaigned on not doing this very thing, of course, remain opposed to the bill. One statewide sheriffs association has done an about-face and now supports the new iteration of the measure. If memory serves, you both had reservations about this proposal initially. Where are you at with it now, Becky?
Well, of course, this was precipitated by a situation in Charlotte where a criminal who had done some bad stuff was let back into the streets and did more bad stuff because they were not detained and would have fallen under this requirement of the ICE stuff. I think, you know, at the bottom of this, the question has to be, how do we preserve public safety? That has to be the number one concern with this. I think that's why the Sheriff's Association had changed their position on it, in that their contention is people who would fall under this, that would have been required to be reported to the ICE officials, are people who have been put in jail with some serious crimes. And so it's the safety and public safety issue that's part of it. You know, I don't know how you get into this. I mean, as I understand it, this is not mandated from the federal government. As you mentioned, Jeff, the sheriffs ran on the position that they were not going to take this into consideration. They were not going to comply with the at least suggestion to report this to the ICE officials. So, you know, you have this discrepancy between rural sheriffs and urban sheriffs and the Sheriff's Association in the middle of it. And again, in my view, at the end of the day, what we need to be asking is what makes the public the safest that we can possibly do. And those are the policies that we ought to put into place.
I think it's being driven by Donald Trump. I think it's being driven by the perception amongst some people on the right that they can use these divide and conquer anti-immigrant politics to win elections. I think that's what this is about. I think they have bludgeoned the Sheriff's Association into caving in on the issue. There are still these detainer requests that come from ICE are not judicial orders that are signed by any court official. They are not arrest warrants. They are simply a request to hold someone who, in many instances, the sheriffs would have no reason to hold. There are sheriffs who take a very strong position that this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And indeed, of all people, B.J. Barnes, who is a conservative Republican sheriff from Guilford County, who actually lost his election to a person he doesn't like very much in Guilford County, actually came out strong this week and said this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Constitution applies to everybody, even people, anybody on American soil, not just people who are, you know, lawfully present immigrants. And so this is, I think, a really bad bill. It's going to hurt public safety because, as we said in the bottom line, this is what the sheriffs are saying. If the public is afraid to come and talk to them about crimes, real crimes committed in their neighborhood, because they're afraid the sheriff's going to haul them in on an immigration charge, that makes the community less safe. And so they would prefer not to become federal law federal immigration enforcement officials.
What also makes the community less safe if dangerous people are re-released into the community. So, again, you know, there's a balance here. And this may very well be one of those that works its way through the courts and that we would see, you know, higher courts, maybe even the U.S. Supreme Court, weighing in on some of these kind of immigration questions.
Meanwhile, officials at the State Board of Elections announced this week that they will not certify any new electronic voting machines until they get more information about the company that owns the voting machines that are used in our state. At a time when there is so much perceived and or real infiltration and manipulation of elections, should we not simply stop using these machines altogether and go back entirely to paper ballots?
I think that there is an argument to be made that we should use computers in counting ballots, of course. But I do think that the League of Women Voters issued a release this week, the Wake County League of Women Voters put out a release saying, creating a paper trail for everybody's vote is an enormously important security measure. It provides a way to double check if there is a closely contested election, if there are allegations of improprieties. I mean, and admittedly, there can be problems with paper ballots as well. But when you've got private vendors, and some of the private vendors, at least there are allegations that some of them have some connections to foreign governments or foreign oligarchs who may own part of them. And the notion that someone's only going to push a computer screen and that's the only record that will ever be made, and that the vendor who designed that software and that computer might actually be, you know, a foreign government or a foreign power, I think we all ought to be very troubled by that, because we have compelling evidence that there's been efforts to influence and interfere in our elections. So I wonder why we even go to private vendors to design these machines. Why aren't we doing this all in-house in our, you know, making this a public fully public enterprise?
Well, I don't know that there's a clear answer to this. I don't know that we can really determine one way is better than the other. I mean, there are some flaws and some potential problems with paper ballots. I mean, what if there's a fire? What if someone goes in and inserts additional paper ballots? You know, we like to think things are secure when they're on computers and that, you know, all of that is stored somewhere on a hard mm-hmm. drive. But we know, you know, that hacking occurs and some other things. So, I mean, in my
but
view...
you can't hack paper.
You what?
You can't hack paper.
That's true. Right. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think China or Russia can hack paper, but
no.
They might come up with something.
Yeah. As we look at this, I'm not sure that, you know, there's a clear definition of one is clearly completely secure under every single circumstance. But I do think that the integrity and the security of our elections is very, very important. You know, who does that? Who designs the machines? Who, you know, I think some, you know, in these things too, you have to take into account the cost associated with it. So, you know, is the cost lower if you contract with a big national manufacturer who makes, you know, hundreds of these and spits them out all the time. You know, there's lots of things to take into consideration. I don't think we have a clear-cut answer. I know that we're thinking about this in North Carolina and which way we should go. The other thing we always have to think about this is, number one, the cost, and number two, the timing. I mean, there's cost of making some changes before the 2020 election. You know, how do you get the machines in? How do you get everything calibrated? So this is more complicated than I think the three of us would like it to be.
Sure.
I'm sure it is complex. I'll just say I'm not too worried about the cost. If it costs us a little bit more to have clean, safe, secure elections, I'm more than willing to pay that. I just know that over the years when I've voted here in Wake County, I've lived here for several decades, we've used paper ballots and then we feed them into the machine after, which counts them. You know, I drew a little line between two arrows or I filled in a bubble, and I felt more secure doing that than the notion where I have lived in other places where I literally just pushed a button and I never saw what it did. And we know there have been problems with it. So, again, no perfect solution, but I think the idea of having a paper trail is a good check.
I can't help but think of the words "Made in America." For some reason, that has crossed my mind a couple times this week, where it's like, oh, you know, it would be nice if there was some way to ensure that these things were made in America. It's not that simple, though.
If the voting machines had that little sticker, you know how we get, you know, I voted. Right. You know, if all the machines had those. But you know, having said all this, I'm glad we're having this discussion, and I'm glad that we're looking at it. I think it's an important discussion to have.
Finally, Congressman Mark Walker said that he will not challenge Republican U.S. Senator Tom Tillis in a primary next year, Republican primary, of course. Becky, you have previously said that the more, the merrier, and competition is a good thing. Are you disappointed by Walker announcing that he will, or saying that he is not going to challenge Tillis in a 2020 Republican primary?
You know, I mean, I'm not disappointed. I'm not disappointed. I mean, Mark Walker is a sitting congressman. I don't think this was part of his announcement, but I think that we anticipate that he will run for his congressional seat again. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, I mean, the more candidates we have, the more incumbents we have, the more people with records, the more conversations that we can have, I think the better it makes our system.
I was struck, maybe I misread that, but what I read Walker say was that Trump and the Trump people had encouraged him to run, which has got to be taken by Senator Tillis as a very worrisome sign. If the Trump administration is, I mean, Tillis has been doing his utmost in the last few weeks to physically meld himself to the Trump administration in any possible way, but it's got to be a bit of a worrisome sign. He's already got a fairly well-financed challenger, Garland Tucker. Tillis has got some issues, and when a prominent congressman within his own state indicates that he had been encouraged by the White House to challenge an incumbent Republican senator, Tom Tillis is going to have a very interesting next, 17, 18 months.
I agree with Rob. It's going to be very interesting. But, you know, the other thing is, this is why we have regular elections. For Senate, they're every 6 years, and people run on their records. They run on who their friends are, who they're committed to, you know, influences. We get to decide as voters. I think that's a very healthy thing.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield directs NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks,
too. Guys. Take care.